An accusation of bigotry in the Senate.
Hansard is a public document. It bothers me tremendously that my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, will read that I was accused of bigotry on the chamber floor.
I'm very sorry to hear that Senator Plett feels that I called him a bigot. I did not. My comment was addressed to a practice of othering and the damage that can happen when that becomes a practice.
On the feature today, an edited audio version of a very emotional Senate debate on transgenderism and a point of order raised by Senator Don Platt. In the news, the anti-Islamophobia motion had its first round of debate in Parliament last week. ARPA staff getting some training in pro-life apologetics. Finances for independent and homeschooling families have hit the federal conservative leadership race, and ARPA is hiring again.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
A controversial motion to have the Commons Heritage Committee study the issue of religious discrimination, specifically including the term Islamophobia, went through its first hour of debate in the House of Commons last week. There's increasing opposition to the motion, largely because of fears that the motion will restrict criticism of a specific religion and because the term Islamophobia remains undefined. The Conservative caucus drafted a rival motion of their own, which was similar but contained some important distinctions. Kingston MP Scott Reed outlined the fundamental differences during debate on Motion 103.
The two motions differ in only three particulars. First, the Conservative motion condemns racism, religious intolerance, and discrimination against all of Canada's largest religious groups, Muslims, Jews, Christians, Sikhs, and Hindus, while Motion M103 mentions only Islam by name. Second, the focus of M103 is on the undefined term Islamophobia, rather than on protecting Muslims as individuals. This implies that what Canada needs is state protection for faiths, rather than for the safety of the faithful. And finally, the Conservative motion specifically names as the paradigmatic example of impermissible hatred what it describes as, quote, the recent and senseless violent acts at a Quebec City mosque, end quote. This wording reiterates that it is the faithful who must be protected, rather than the faiths they profess, since eternal truth is under the protection of an almighty and all-loving protector, far more powerful than the government of Canada.
The issue will come back for a vote in April. Three ARPA staff members were in Florida last week for the annual Genocide Awareness Project. It features a tour of a large visual display with abortion victim photography and a group of individuals engaging university students on three different university campuses on the issue of preborn human rights. ARPA's Ottawa Administrator Hannah Sycamore was part of the project.
We're here with the Canadian Centre for Bioethical Reform to educate students on Florida campuses about what abortion really is. A lot of people don't know what it is. They think it's just a medical procedure that, you know, women just, like, they have the choice to decide what they want to do with their bodies. But we're showing that what it really does is kill children.
Sycamore says she really appreciated some of the training that was provided as part of the program.
With the pro-life apologetics training, they went over three main things. So you need to get common ground with the person you're speaking with. Once you have common ground, then you can use analogies. Analogies often are really good ways to change people's minds. And then you also have questions. So you always want to bring up questions and ask them what they think about what they're saying and just make sure that they understand what they're saying, and then you can get somewhere with that. And then they also went over something they called the human rights argument. So you would ask, do you believe in human rights? And who do you think gets human rights? And almost everyone's going to say, you know, humans get human rights. So then you ask them, if a man and a woman reproduce, what would their offspring be? They're going to say, of course, human right. Then we logically conclude that abortion must be a human rights violation.
ARPA's Director of Law and Policy, Andre Schutten, was also part of the tour. He says the week reminded staff of what's at stake in the abortion debate, calling it a powerful, draining, and rewarding exercise. Funding issues for families who educate their children outside of the public education system have hit the radar in the federal conservative leadership race. Leadership candidate Andrew Scheer unveiled a policy last week promising tuition tax credits of up to $4,000 per child for families who have children in independent schools and $1,000 per child for homeschooling families.
We do this for post-secondary education. Parents can write off portions of the tuition that they pay for their children. So this is just a logical extension of that. And when you think about it, families who either homeschool their children or send their children to an independent school are really helping the public system. The parents pay the taxes to support the public system, but the child does not attend. So there's extra resources, extra money going into the system that their children's not using up. So every family who's currently homeschooling or having their children at an independent school, if you had every family put them in the public system tomorrow morning, it'd be a massive drain and would likely lead to some pretty significant tax increases. So this tax credit is designed to recognize that and recognize the sacrifice that many families make to send their children to an independent school or to homeschool.
Scheer released that policy position last week. On Monday, candidate Brad Trost released an identical policy paper. And finally, ARPA is hiring again, looking for a full-time Alberta director.
We've long seen the potential to have greater impact in the province of Alberta, especially with the more recent challenges in the education system. And we're also aware that by not having a staff member focused on Alberta, it simply doesn't get the same kind of attention that BC or Ontario have. So we're very, very thankful for a small group of young and courageous families who came together and offered the financial means to make this vision a reality.
That's ARPA's Executive Director, Mark Pennigan. He says they're looking for a pretty specific skill set.
We envision it being about 60% focused on grassroots engagement, going through the province, building relationships with the churches, with the schools, the ARPA groups, and all the individuals, communicating with them about the current and ongoing challenges that exist. So we're looking for a strong writer, a strong communicator, somebody who is very comfortable working with a wide variety of people. The other large component of the job is going directly to the Alberta government. So lobbying, sitting down with public office holders, building relationships for long-term engagement, long-term change.
If you know of anyone who might fit the bill for this job, the details are up on the ARPA website. The competition closes at the end of March. Back with more after this from ARPA's Manager of Grassroots Engagement, Colin Postman.
Join me on February 27th or 28th in the Fraser Valley, British Columbia, or March 1st or March 2nd in Alberta for a series of workshops focusing on generating new ideas for action, on brainstorming new ways of engagement, and getting more people involved in the Canadian cultural and political debate. If you think you know everything there is to know about ARPA, or if you want to get involved with shaping culture, with the pro-life cause, or with Canadian politics, join us for one of these workshops in your area. For more information, go to the events page at ARPA.canada.ca.
And we're back on the program. There was an emotional debate in the Senate last week about language, choice of words. On the feature today, an edited audio version of that debate, which started when Manitoba Senator Dawn Platt rose on a point of order.
Yesterday in this chamber, a senator in her maiden speech or in her first speech in the Senate accused me of bigotry. To attribute such a serious charge as bigotry to the phrase, these people, is preposterous. And I will read what I said so that we are all clear. And this was in reference to Senator Whetstone's speech last week, and I had a question. And the question was this. When you talk about gender parity, and there is a male who identifies as a female or a male who identifies as no gender, where do you put these people in the realm of gender parity? When proponents of this said legislation that I was asking about have said, these people have waited long enough, or these people deserve equal protection under the law, I trust that this senator would not insinuate that those comments are of a bigoted nature. Colleagues, this is not about me. This is about this chamber and the comments that were disparaging to this chamber. Hansard is a public document in which our grandchildren, yours and mine, will have the opportunity to read about the important work we have done in this chamber. It bothers me tremendously that my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, will read that I was accused of bigotry on the chamber floor. Mr. Speaker, pursuant to Rule 613, all personal, sharp, or taxing speeches are unparliamentary and out of order. Accusing someone of bigotry is a personal attack of the highest order. And as such, Mr. Speaker, it is my assertion that these comments, in fact, were out of order.
Senator McFedrin.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for this opportunity. I'm very sorry to hear that Senator Plett feels that I called him a bigot. I did not. My comment was addressed to a practice that can slip into many a debate, either here or elsewhere, of othering, and the damage that can happen when that becomes a practice. I've reviewed both the language that Senator Plett used last week that I referred to, and some of the other comments of some other senators who've expressed concerns about transgender rights, such as impact on their ability to use a bathroom, impact on their ability to express themselves. And I wanted to be very clear that it was as much tone as it was word. And to my ears, I heard othering. I then went on to indicate that it can be, I did not say that it was in this instance, it can be an indicator of bigotry. And that in a very general statement was what I intended. And then I went on to say that bigotry does not belong in an inclusive constitutional democracy. Again, my intention was a general statement. And what I was trying to do was to bring my own perspective as a human rights specialist, wanting to respect individual senators and the debate, but also wanting to make a general observation about language that can slip into a damaging territory, perhaps not even with intent. So, Senator Plett, what I would like to say to you is that I do regret the experience that you've had from my words, and I hope that the clarification that I'm offering as to the general nature of my comment will be helpful in reducing the hurt that you've expressed.
Okay, I'll go one more. Senator Lang?
I've been listening to the debate, and I think we better cut to the chase here. I think Senator Pratt said it very well. It's all very easy here to watch a senator have a personal attack on him and sit here and rationalize why another senator would do this. Quite frankly, what's happened is totally unacceptable. And I would ask, as a senator here, Senator McFedrin, to stand up in her place and withdraw her remarks.
Hear, hear.
Senator McFedrin.
Let me just say that I think that the point that I was making, a general point about othering, can stand without reference to any individual senator. That the language that is othering can be understood as an indicator of bigotry, and bigotry that has no place in an inclusive democracy. I'm certainly prepared, given what I've heard from Senator Plett, to ask if any reference to Senator Plett could be removed. That would be the first two sentences, and leave a general statement about language that is othering. So I hope that that will be experienced as sufficient to make it clear that there's no evidence in the words that I spoke yesterday that I called Senator Plett a bigot. I did not.
That debate happened last Wednesday. On Thursday, Senate Speaker George Fury issued his ruling.
I know that we do give some leeway to new senators, particularly in their first speech. However, the remarks alluding to Senator Plett were outside the bounds of acceptable parliamentary debate. They were hurtful and inappropriate. The language in Senator McFedrin's speech of February the 14th can, in the context it was used, be characterized as unparliamentary. The point of order is well-founded. I strongly urge Senator McFedrin to avoid offensive personal language. Colleagues, let us continue to engage in respectful debate and avoid, at all times, personal attacks.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.